Welcome to the Solo Board Game Podcast, also known as Solo BG Podcast. Derek here on the other side of the spigot, episode number 122. It's been a long time, it's been almost 2 months, and we start with a new format. Things are going to change a little bit from the previous ones, so if this is your first time on the podcast, well, welcome. Perfect time to join in, and I hope you enjoy this new format, and I can't wait to hear all about your feedback. So we start in 3, 2, 1. And in this new format, the first thing we're going to do is going to jump back in time. We're going to jump into the DeLorean and go back to the year 2019. To be exact, let's go back to March 29 of 2019. Back then, we published an episode called House of Danger. And in that episode, which it was number 22, I talk about House of Danger. House of Danger is a choose-your-own-adventure type of game that brings us kind of like to the nostalgic times, probably, and I'm being a little bit ignorant of this because, of course, I wasn't born yet, but I believe there were some books on the 1970s, early 1980s, probably before that, where you were choosing your own adventure, kind of like you were having your whole, you know, like a kind of like a storybook, and you were reading through, and then you were making choices. Maybe you were rolling some dice, you were taking some notes, and then the book would take you in different paths to different situations, and it was like kind of like a choose your own adventure. So you, in a way, you were playing like a solo board game on the early ages of this hobby or the board game industry. So House of Danger is published by Zeman Games, and basically what it did, it was trying to recreate those stories, recreate those adventures, and kind of like a bring it like in a kind of like a mix or a hybrid way of a board game, but also some heavy narration, right? So to create that immersiveness, kind of like, you know, choosing your own adventure and role-playing it. So the game is just a bunch of cards that you will be flipping and reading, and the game will put you in situations where, well, you either choose this or choose that, and then you're going to roll some dice, you're going to use some weapons and items that you will collect during your adventure, and then depending on what you do, sometimes that will be a bad choice and you're going to end up being dead, or some good choices where you're going to be succeeding that part of the adventure, and probably your character will get some armor or some blessings or something, and then you will keep moving forward. Now, what do I think about this game? Back then, I remember really liking it, and probably that was the reason why I brought it to the episode. But actually, then a little bit after, because this game I played it the first time on 2019, a little bit after, on 2020, during the pandemic, like we all know, we were, you know, in our houses, on our apartments, in our own spaces, not interacting a lot with each other. So that was a big hit for the industry, of course, because board games, in this case, if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably because, just as I do, you enjoy playing solo board games. But at the same time, you know, you miss that part of interaction. So back then, I remember playing with my good friend Jonathan, which you have listened to him in previous episodes. We play kind of like a Skype through online, kind of like with our cameras, each of us in our houses with our game rooms. And we were playing this game. Basically, he didn't own a copy. I own a copy of the game. And I was like, just grab a diamond and roll it and you tell me. And, you know, I was kind of like, I guess mastering the game for him and telling him the story. He was rolling the die, making his choices. And together, in a cooperative way, we won the game. I think once you died, I think you there's a part where, spoiler alert, you face a monkey or something like that. I don't remember very well the story. And then you basically will be dead, but then you can go back and try it again. There were two versions of this game. It was this one, The House of Danger, and then it was another one, I believe, that it was based on space or with a space atmosphere or theme. I don't remember exactly, but anyway, that's the game that we talked 100 episodes ago, actually. And do I still own that game? No, I do not. I do not, because the game was pretty cool back then, in 2019. It was something new for me because I never experienced the books that I was talking to you about at the beginning of the episode. So I enjoyed it, you know, a couple of sessions. It was great. Very easy setup and just put it there. Definitely, as a cooperative game, I don't think it worked very well because it was more like designed towards a solo adventure, I guess, like the original books. And it was a lot of, you know, reading, going on and on. So because of that, the nature of the game was probably more for solo. I have good memories of the game because of what I just told you, playing it over the pandemic. It was kind of like, another type of D&D session over or through Skype or, you know, any of those technologies that you can use to talk to people through the camera. You call it Zoom, Google Meet, whatever. But it was a cool experience. And I don't own the game anymore. I don't think I will own the game ever, just because, once again, what I just mentioned, the replayability, there's not too much replayability there. So I think it's a good kind of game that, you know, I think it was like $19 or $20 or something, and you will get it, you will play it a couple times, and then pass it along, and that's what I ended up doing. I don't remember to who I passed it along, but, I mean, I can see that person play it as well, like two or three times, and then next player. So I think it was cool for that matter, but it's not a game that I will keep. It's not a game that I will own. But still, it's weird because I still don't give like terrible ratings. It's probably right now, if you ask me, I will give it a 3, maybe, you know, just in the middle between, yeah, it was a cool experience, one shot, that's cool, move on. Anyway, that was 100 episodes ago. Now, moving forward with the episode, we take the DeLorean back in our times. And of course, this is not going to change from the previous format. My way of interacting with all of you, my friends, besides, you know, receiving your comments in social media at SoloBG Podcast, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And also, you know, to the people that I talk to sometimes at stores or people that send me an email to solobgpodcast@gmail.com. I want to say also, you know, another way of interacting with all of you is mentioning the top countries and the top cities that listened to the last episode, which it was episode 121. And like I said, it was almost 2 months since I published an episode. And while I'm scrolling here to the panel, the last episode was published in March 7, 2023. And currently, I'm recording on May 22 of 2023, so more than 2 months. I will tell you in the next episode the reason of my break. But anyway, right now, the countries: United States, thank you so much, and top one, United Kingdom, Germany, Spain, Canada, Australia, Sweden, Netherlands, Portugal, and Mexico. Thank you so much. Mi querido México, thank you so much for listening to the podcast in English as well. Now, the cities that listened to the episode, there was a bunch of them. But we have in Massachusetts, we have Brighton, we have in Madrid, we have in Sydney, New South Wales, we have in Memphis, Tennessee, we have in Dayton, Ohio, we have Orem, Utah, we have Los Angeles, California, San Jose, California, Chicago, Illinois, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Seattle, Washington, Flushing, New York. We also have some cities in Germany, Frankfurt, also on Madrid. We also have, let me see here, Albuquerque. We already mentioned Seattle, a lot of cities. So thank you so much. Portland, Oregon, Melbourne, Victoria, San Francisco, Atlanta, Indianapolis, of course, in Indiana, Miami, Florida, in Carmel, Indiana as well. So thank you so much. We're pretty much neighbors. And Rockville, Maryland. So anyway, talking about Indianapolis, Indiana, the Gen Con is just around the corner. We are about 2 months away, actually, a little bit more than 2 months away from the convention. And of course, I will try to bring you an episode where I told you my expectations for the con, which games I will be chasing, and then an episode after the con as well, with my impressions from it. Now, compared to other years, I can tell you, and this is going to be, I guess, a spoiler alert, that most likely I won't be able to do much coverage inside the con. And there's reasons for that once again, I will tell you in the next episode, in the way you stay tuned. But I still promise you to, you know, give you as much as coverage as possible, meaning that I will take a bunch of pictures, I will post them in social media. If I get a few interviews, which I'm not planning into because of reasons that I will tell you once again, but if I get an interview, of course, I will publish it as well. But I will give you the pre and post Gen Con, in that way you can know all about it without, you know, doing it different, like, to compare to previous years. Anyway, without further ado, let's go to a new section where I'm going to tell you about the news that I'm excited about, the solo board game side of things, but also in general about the board game industry. So let's go with some news. We'll be right back. Okay, and talking about Gen Con, you know, on Gen Con, they're going to have some events that are already live. So if you're interested in any of the events or attending to any of the events, there's for every taste and flavor, my friends. So you can go and sign up for the event right now if you're going to be visiting the con here in Indianapolis, Indiana. At the first weekend of August, you know, they have magic events. You know, they will have also demo events. And talking about demos, one of the ones that I'm very interested on, it's also a news that came about a month ago or probably, which was announced by Arcane Wonders, Call of Duty the board game. Call of Duty the board game. This game is planned to be released in 2024. The Kickstarter should be online by the fall of this year of 2023. But on Gen Con, they're going to have some events where you can demo the game. And I'm looking forward to it because surprisingly, I guess surprising for me. Maybe not so surprising for you, but I never was a huge fan of the Call of Duty video games until I played the most recent one, Modern Warfare 2, or second part, I guess. I hope a lot of Call of Duty fans were there don't punish me for my bad interpretation of the title. But anyway, I played that game recently on the PS5, and oh my god, I played the whole campaign, and it's a fantastic game. I got, you know, sucked by the game and engaged right away. And, you know, I'm becoming a fan of those types of games. My early memories from first-person shooter, I guess, and my favorite experience that I can still live in my memory and still play once in a while in my handheld devices is the famous game of GoldenEye 007. But then definitely Call of Duty, the new game, is very cinematic and immersive, and it's great. It's great. The voice actors are fantastic. The story really engaged me. So now I'm looking forward to this Call of Duty, the board game. What are the expectations that we can have for the game? Well, going through some sources online, you know, the game will be, of course, bringing some elements of strategy or tactical planning and combat to create an intense and immersive gaming experience. That's what some websites mentioned, right? And some first impressions. Now, when I read somewhere around the internet, it was that this game, it was going to have a competitive mode. I'm thinking something kind of like maybe like Sniper Elite. Maybe that could be a good idea, where Sniper Elite, the board game, where it's like kind of like the same way of, but a more easy and smooth way, like kind of like a Fury of Dracula, where one player is playing with the sniper and the other players are playing, you know, the different other factions that they're trying to cut him. I'm assuming in Call of Duty they can do something like that. But the interesting part of this, and what I'm most excited about it, not knowing the mechanics, and that's why I was telling you about the Gen Con event, is that it's going to have a solo and cooperative mode. So I'm very excited about that because, of course, Arcane Wonders has done a great job with recent games. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to demo the game, and I'm sure I'm going to be one of the backers towards the fall. So that's one of the news that I want to share you right now regarding the board game industry. Now, other news is that another Kickstarter that it's, you know, having a big success right now, and it's still like 15 days to go at the time of this recording, it's Aeon Trespass Odyssey. Now, Aeon Trespass Odyssey, it's a big, big game where basically it's kind of like a adventure game that, of course, it involves a campaign. So if that tells you right away and tells you a lot of stuff, well, this is a campaign game, and you should be prepared for a campaign game like this. It's pretty epic. All the reviews for the game that I have heard, and impressions from the game that I have heard, are very positive so far. It's just a game that it will demand so much from you, which, hey, when you're playing solo, that's not a big deal all the time, right? It promises 300 and plus hours of content, 90 minutes per session, 1 to 4 players. Let's be real, it's probably for solo only. And yeah, it's right now on Kickstarter. There's a way that you can jump in just to kind of like get the feel of the game, the Heracles Pledge, which is $129, 118 euros. And then you have the Odysseus, which is $300, 273 euros. Or if you want to go crazy on it, you can get the core game, a bunch of expansions and stuff for $647 and 592 euros. Now, the game promises a lot, so it's live right now. Clank Legacy 2, there's 4 days to go. Prepare for the Lead Pledge. The Legacy, I played it. Actually, I haven't finished it. I wish there could be a solo mode for the official solo mode for the Legacy. I'm not aware of one. And if you know that there's one, please let me know, because I really had a good experience with it. Well, anyway, the Legacy 2 is there with more content, more expansions, more things to discover. So worth it. Check it out. Other games that are on Kickstarter right now, there's a bunch of them actually, that I will be having on my radar. And once again, going to video games-based games, kind of, it's Apex Legends. Apex Legends, the board game, it's already live on Kickstarter. It's a team versus team miniatures board game for 1 to 6 players. I will be interested to address the solo mode and see how it goes. But it promises an innovative combat system, unique legendary characters, modular design, and endless replayability. Ha, let's see about that. And, of course, it has a solo and co-op way of playing. Now, one promising thing is that the designer of this expansions that allows you to play solo and co-op are designed by David Tursey, which we know David Tursey is kind of a promise of a good solo mode. Now, the game looks fantastic. I mean, you know, with all the 3D terrain and scenario, now, I haven't played the game a lot, the video game, I mean, but just by looking at it and not caring too much about the theme, the game looks fantastic on the picture of Kickstarter. So maybe a game that if you're like me and kind of like those epic campaigns, big boxes and stuff, you is probably worth checking it out. Apex Legends right now available on Kickstarter for the next 16 days. So worth checking it out if you like those types of games like I do myself. Now, in this new format of the podcast, we're going to have the obviously the section where we're going to be talking about board games, but we're going to do it a little bit different. Before, I used to focus in one game per episode. That's it, one game, and I will tell you everything about that game. Now, I realized, listening to some feedback, that yes, it was probably cool, but at the same time, some of the methods that I was using, they're probably more suitable for videos, kind of like, you know, explaining how the game plays and things like that, because I agree, if I want to learn how to play a game, most likely I won't go to an audio source or a podcast. I will go to a YouTube video or any type of video that will show me how to play, and at the same time, you know, or read the rule book if by any means. But so I'm trying to modify those things, and by doing that, of course, I will try to make an effort to condense the time in that way I cannot only tell you about one game. Matter of fact, my whole goal will be to tell you briefly about 3 games that I've been playing, review them, tell you my impressions, and not focusing too much on how they play, but more on what I like and what I didn't like. And of course, I will give you an overview of the product and everything. I will tell you, you know, what do I like about components-wise and stuff. So without further ado, let's jump into the next section, which is, of course, to talk about 3 board games. Okay, so in the last 2 episodes, before I took the break, the 2 months break, I was giving you sort of like a trilogy, and I want to respect that, and I want to give you that third part of the trilogy, and that way we can close it, right? We all hate when we're watching a good show on Netflix, or even if it's not a good show, if you are going through Netflix or any streaming service, I guess I just give some free advertising, but anyway, when you're going to a streaming service and you're watching a season of something, and then you find out next week or next couple of days that it got canceled, you're like, oh man, it sucks, because you were so engaged in the story. So same thing here, since I hate that, I will tell you the third part of the trilogy. And what am I, you might wonder, what are you talking about? Well, in the last 2 episodes, first on January 23, I talk about Endless Winter with the expansions, right? And I talk to you about the solo mode and how it was. And I give you my rating. And then I talk on the following episode, which it was March 7, Cinematic Dune, which it was Dune Imperium, playing it solo with all the, you know, expansions and so on and so forth. And the only one that we were pending, it was The Lost Ruins of Arnak, published by Sech Game Editions, or CGE, with the Expedition Leaders expansion. I played the game multiple times, you know, in this break. So I'm pretty confident to give you my review on the game. And that will be the first game that I will talk about it on this episode. And at the end, I will tell you, at the end of this review, I will tell you which of the three of them I think has the better solo mode and overall has given me a more immersive and unique and great experience, right? So expedition leaders, well, we're giving our expedition an edge by choosing six new unique characters, each equipped with different abilities, skills, and starting decks that offer different strategies and a style of play for us to explore. In addition, the leader abilities, which bring a new element to the symmetry of the game, the expansion contains alternative research tracks that offer more variety and a bigger challenge. New item and artifact cards to create new combos and synergies between the same characters, along with more guardians and assistants to meet and sites to explore. So, Lost Ruins of Arnak, right? In case you haven't played it, basically, it's a worker placement game with the Indiana Jones kind of theme, which, by the way, the new movie is coming up soon. And that's it, right? Like, you're placing your workers, you're gathering resources, and then with those resources, you will be able to visit certain locations and explore and fight some monsters. As you're trying to explore the island, I guess, of the ruins of Arnak, you also will have a deck of cards where you're going to be drawing 5 cards. And with those cards, you will be able to travel to different locations. Some locations will require you to go buy food. Some locations will require you to go in your little jeep. And some other locations, you can only go flying. Now, the important part of this is that at some point, if you don't have resources on your cards to go walk into a one location, you can still use the one that is higher above, meaning from walking, then it will be the jeep, and then from the jeep, it will be the airplane, to make it up for those resources, and that way you can travel. Once you travel to a location, you're going to get some treasures, which will allow you to get some victory points, and then you're going to fight a monster, right? And once you fight the monster, if you're able to overcome that monster, you're also going to get rewards that sometimes you can use instantly, and sometimes you can save it for later turns. And as you're exploring, that's one way of getting victory points, because at the end of the game, of course, locations and monsters that you visit, they will give you victory points. Also, on your board, as you are finding treasures, those treasures, you can use them for immediate effects to give you more resources to do other things, or you can save them for victory points at the end of the game. Now, each character with the leader's expansion will have unique abilities that you can use. Some characters will give you a better hand management or a better deck as you start the game. Some characters will allow you to do things like, you know, since it's a workers playment, and depending on the number of players, you can get blocked by other players. Some characters won't care about that and they can go anywhere. Or some characters will be better at traveling to locations even if they don't have the resources, or through recruiting items or artifacts, which those are the cards that you will be getting on a track as well. In that way, you can improve your deck in a way. Some others will allow you to recycle your deck. Some others will take advantage of the fear cards, because if you're not able to defeat a monster and you earn your turn on that monster location, well, you're going to get a fear card, which basically, it just kind of like clog your deck. So it's just cards that you don't use for anything, and there's negative points at the end of the game. So there's a character that is pretty cool that uses that fear to do some cool stuff. So the Leader's Expedition really adds, you know, a variance on that end, and it makes the characters more vibrant and more unique, I guess, during the game. There's also the research track that you can go in Arnak, where you can go by the magnifying glass. That's what I call it, right? Like, it's like investigating. And then the journal or the little book, which is where you're recording everything that you are investigating, right? So by default, you have to explore first, going up with the magnifying glass, and then going with your book in that way you're documenting. That's thematically how it works, until you get to the top of the pyramid to get treasures as well. Now, with the expansion, you have also the double-sided board that you can use in a better way, and it feels more immersive, right? And as you go through that track, versus to just unlocking some rewards as you're going up, with the new expansion, now you can have choices where, okay, I go to this specific space, well, now either I get the reward or I can do this or that. So it gives you that kind of like option as you go through the research track, because as you probably hear about it, and as you know, or if you don't know, this is a game where kind of like similar as about Endless Winter and Dune Imperium, there's different strategies to get points and different strategies that can lead you to success. And most likely you won't be able to do anything, meaning that you won't be able to go and defeat and explore the monsters in an Indiana Jones adventure, and at the same time, trying to research and document things, you won't be able to accomplish everything, right? So you have to, at some point in the game, you have to either try to keep the balance between those two things, or try to dedicate yourself to one path. So, and that's the trick of the game. That's the trick of like, okay, now, I mean, as the game progresses, like where do I decide where to go, right? If I'm not doing very well on this particular strategy that probably I was attempting. And that's overall like a brief idea of the game. Once again, you're going to get points by recruiting cards, because every card that you ended up on your deck is going to give you victory points. The fear cards will give you negative victory points. The monster will give you victory points. The treasure will give you victory points. The research track will also give you victory points at the end of the game. Treasures that you achieve at the end of the pyramid will also give you victory points at the end of the game. And the solo mode, well, the solo mode has two, you have two ways of play it. One, with the physical copy of the game, of course, you have some tableau or some tiles that you're going to mix, and you can adjust the difficulty because they go by colors, green and red, so you can kind of like adjust the difficulty in building the AI deck. And on the back of those cards, they're going to have arrows left and right, and basically you're going to reveal one tile. It's going to tell you where the automa worker goes, and by the left or right, that's where you're going to kind of like a tie-break decision, right? Now, you can go to the CGE website, and there's actually a web design app that will allow you to play the game without using that deck of tiles, and you're just clicking, and it's pretty easy, and it's pretty friendly user, and it's fantastic. I mean, when I play the game, I much rather use the app from the website rather than the tiles. And there's also a campaign on the website, a free campaign, and a few scenarios that you can play and kind of like have like having like a connecting narrative scenarios kind of thing, and it's pretty cool as well. Now, what do I think of Arnak with Expedition Leaders with the solo mode? The solo mode, it's great. It really gives you the vibe that you're playing against another player. It feels, even if you use the hardest difficulty, it doesn't feel that terrible hard. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It's not extremely difficult. And it's kind of like, I won't say easy if you play it in the extreme difficulty mode or hard mode, but still, like it's doable if that makes sense. It's doable. It's not terrible. It's not a game that you're going to be losing over and over and over and over. It's very fun because you can try different strategies, like I said, like researching or going in the adventure. So it's very fun. It's very fun and it's immersive. And like if you play with a campaign, that's always a plus. It also feels like that, like you're having another player there. And it's a very smart and smooth solo mode. Like I mentioned, even if you play with the tiles, you still get the fun, you know, of mixing it. And it's not too much to work around, I guess. The downtime between your turn and the AI turn will be a matter of, I don't know, maybe 30 to 40 seconds if you play in the physical way. If you're playing with the app, it will be less than that. So it plays pretty smooth, honestly. And it's a game that I enjoy playing in the solo mode. The setup, it's kind of like, you know, it takes a lot to set it up because you have to organize the deck of cards and everything and put the tiles and everything. It's not terrible bad, but the setup really, really takes some time. I think it's worth it. I think the compared to the play time and compared to the play experience, the setup is it's still well balanced for the game. Now, what do I rate the game? The game, it's a game that I really like. I played multiple times I played multiple times solo, and it's a game that really engaged me. It's a game that it looks beautiful on the table. It's a game that the theme is very appealing to me, and the mechanics are very smooth and easy. But at the same time, it requires a bunch of strategy. So for this game going from 0 to 5, I will probably give this game, I mean, I have no doubt, a 4.5. I really, 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 really liked it. It's great. The solo mode is great. There's a new expansion coming out. I don't remember exactly right now the name of the expansion, but this is a game that if you're specifically a solo player and you're on the edge of buying it or not, I will say go for it. But if you're going to go for it, definitely with the Expedition Leaders expansion, because without it, it feels like the game, it feels like the characters are not as important, or they're actually not important at all. I mean, at that point, it's like, whoa, do you want to be blue? Do you want to be green? Do you want to be yellow? Do you want to be red? Versus if now you play with the expansion, it's like, oh, do you want to be this cool guy that does cool thing with the fear? Or you want to be this leader where, you know, he's very good about going to locations and managing resources and getting resources, to keep going on their research track. So now it's a decision for you to make where you are choosing your character. So I will say this game probably without the expansion, I will give it a, like probably a 3.7, 3.8. But with the expansion, adding that important part to the characters, I think it really bumps it up to 4.5. And it's one of those expansions that I will say that they are needed. So, yeah, that's my take on the game overall. Now, we came to the moment of truth. Which of the three of them is the best game for me? And taking all things considered, I mean, we have to agree on this, that the three games are great. Endless Winter, once again, I don't remember the rating that I gave it back then, but it's probably, for me right now, with expansions, it's probably a 4.4 or 4.5 as well. And the production of the game, it's fantastic. It's just fantastic. Dawn Imperium with all the expansions, wow, it's the same thing there. It's a 4.5 for sure, if not more. And Arnak, once again, all things considered, you know, the base game, 3.7, 3.8, all the way to 4.5 with the expansion, because the plus that it adds for the characters. Which one I would think is best? I will tell you a few things more. Production-wise, just out of the box, definitely the winner would be Endless Winter. I compare my version, which it was a retail version, versus the Kickstarter version, and, I mean, I'm not asking too much. It's just great. The retail version is fantastic. So on production, wise specifically, I think Endless Winter will be the winner. Now, art wise, I think there will be a tie between the art from Arnak and Dawn Imperium, because I really enjoy the art from those two. Not that Endless Winter has a bad art; actually, it's a very good art as well. Is done by the Miko, which is also the same artist from Raiders of the North Sea and all those Garfield games, which are fantastic as well. The art is great. It's just I feel that the art on Los Lost Ruins of Arnak and also from Dawn Imperium kind of like engage you more with the theme of the game. Definitely with Dawn Imperium. You have like that art from the movies that really transport you to the actual game and to the theme of the game. Right, and even from characters that they're not in the movie, and by the way, part two is coming up soon, but that are probably from the books, is they're I mean, I haven't read the books, and it's still like they're very engaging to me, art wise, and it fits very well with the theme of the game. Versus Endless Winter, you have the art, which is pretty cool, but at the same time, I mean, it doesn't engage me. It's a cool art, it's a beautiful art on the cards, but it doesn't tell me anything. It doesn't transport me a better way, in an immersive way, to the theme of the game, right? So it's a good art, it looks nice, it looks cute, just like every Raiders of the North Sea, which is fantastic. But I feel like for this particular category, the art from Dawn Imperium and Arnak probably engage more with the theme, if that makes sense. Overall immersiveness, I think Dawn Imperium does a better job compared to the other two. Dawn Imperium really transport you in their immersiveness on the game, and it really takes you there. I mean, if you're a fan of the movie as me, and if you help yourself with some nice Hans Zimmer soundtrack on the background, you know, playing the soundtrack from Dune, I mean, it's like it just take you somewhere else. So it's very cool, the production. I mean, overall with that, in conjunction with the art. Now, of course, the production of the components of Dune Imperium, they are okay, but at the end of the day, they're wooden cubes. So I had to Deluxify my version. There's, of course, expansion, official expansion that you can get to Deluxify any version. But I feel like I wish that Dune Imperium could do a better job on their production of components. Now, the art is great. The immersiveness is great. And here is the tiebreaker for me. How does these three games compare on the solo mode? Which one is better for the solo mode? Which one take less struggling for the solo mode or the automa? Which one is more difficult? Which one of the three of them really makes me feel that I'm playing versus two or three players right out of the box? And I will tell you that the downfall of Endless Winter is that the difficulty is not there. The difficulty is pretty easy, and the solo mode for Endless Winter is very good, but it's more as a training way, kind of like, okay, I'm getting to know the game, different strategies, different mechanics, but it will stop there until they come out with something else. Maybe they will come up with a campaign mode, they will come up with an app, who knows? I hope they do, but so far, The Endless Winter, to me, from the three solo modes, is probably has the weakest-ish solo mode, just because it feels kind of like a training for the game. Lost Ruins of Arnak, right? Lost Ruins of Arnak plays great, but at the same time, just as Endless Winter, the difficulty is still, like, I feel like it needs a bump, right? And the other thing is, like, in those two games, you are playing with versus another player, versus an AI, just that's it, two-player game. There's a bunch to explore. So I feel, I wish there could be more players, more automas for those games to simulate a three-player game maybe, right? And once again, for Arnak, it really helps the expansion and the app, the web-based app, where you can play in the campaign as well and where it manipulates the things for you so the AI plays smoother. Now, also on the Endless Winter, it's a smooth way to play the AI, and it's a very clever and smart way where you are playing a few cards one on top of each other until you hit that eclipse, right? Well, on Arnak, it's also a way that you keep going until the AI doesn't have any workers, or you don't have any workers, or the deck is gone, right? Their deck. So for the turn, so that's also a very clever way to do it. However, in Dune Imperium, you have the AI, which you can play with the deck of cards or with the app, which is great. But even when you play with the cards, right? Even if you do with the cards, you're playing against two other characters, right? Now, those characters won't have their abilities, but you have these two enemies that you're fighting against. And it's very cool to play against the Varan, right? If you're Polo Treated. So that's super cool. So thematically, it's like, wow, you're already there, right? So you have these two opponents that you're playing against. And the solo mode is very smooth. You draw one card from one, you draw one card from there, and it tells you where to go, and it tells you how do they score points in a very easy way. And as the expansions came out, the rules adapt for those expansions, and they actually interact with you in a very clever way in the fighting, in the locations, on the factions track, on the expansion, on the research expansion as well. So they're interacting with you all over the place, and they're gaining points like crazy. And you will feel as you're playing that there's going to be times during the game that the AI or one of the AIs is going to take huge advantage. Then the other one is going to catch up, and then you're going to catch up as well. Or if you're ahead of them, they're going to catch up with you. So overall, I think the solo mode for Dune Imperium just goes over the top. And the design is very elegant, to be honest with you. And the theme is very, it's there. And the epicness and immersiveness and the presence of table. I mean, every time that I set up the game, it just looks beautiful to me. And when I have played with other people and they come and look at the table and the game is already set up, wow, they also give some good impressions about that as well, especially if they're fans of Dunes. Now, I have maybe the bias that I really like the theme of Dune because I'm not going to lie, I never read the books. I haven't read the books. I tried to watch the original movie. I couldn't last more than 30 minutes. But with the new movie, right, the part one, I just became a fan and I became hooked with the game. And then the game was fantastic. It's great. So I feel like even if you're not a fan of Dune, you will enjoy it. Now, for me, of course, there is that bias. So I have to say that the champion for me, from those three games, now, once again, saying that those three games are very cool, very good games, very well rated, and games that they will never probably leave my collection, and I will be happy to play them all over again. But definitely the champion will be Dune Imperium. I think Dune Imperium, you know, it's a great game. I think it just have a few things that maybe you can call them errors, but I don't even will go like that, because even in future rulebooks for expansions, they correct some stuff from the previous, from the base game. So it's just very well done. So congratulations to the creators of Dune Imperium. And if you haven't played the game, I mean, if you want to start with the base game, once again, you're gonna get a great experience from the solo perspective. And if you get the expansions, they're going to totally be worth it, because they work very well with the solo mode. And the plus is that you're playing against two AIs instead of one. But it's still like the AI turns will be like probably 20 seconds each, and that's it. So it's great. I mean, it doesn't take too much time from your playing experience. So that was my review on Lost Ruins of Arnak. And with that, I close the trilogy from these three games. And I hope you agree with my decision. And if you don't, please let me know in the social media, SoloBG Podcast. And also, if you have a favorite, also let me know, because I would like to hear all about it. Let's jump into the second game. The other game that I want to talk about, it's designed by Jamie Stegmaier, and the art is by Miles Bensky and Marius Petrescu. You can play this game 1 to 6 players for ages 14 year plus, and it plays in about 30 minutes, I will say probably a little bit more than that, without being too exaggerated. And I'm talking about Rolling Realms by Stonemaier Games. Big disclosure, I was provided with a review copy of the game, and thank you to Jamie for sending this to our location of Solo BG Podcast. Anyway, Rolling Realms. Why are we doing in Rolling Realms? And let me open the box because I want to tell you more about what you're going to find inside. So probably you can hear me opening the box right now. Okay, come on. Okay, Rolling Realms. We're basically, the way I see it, going into a field trip to a Stonemaier facilities or headquarters. And we're going to play with all the games that Stonemaier Games has published, or most of them. But guess what? We're going to play it. All of them, right away, really quick, rolling dice, and Rolling Realms, and playing them in a matter of probably, like I told you, plus 30 minutes or so. So how the game works, well, it's going to have like a, you know, same turn kind of base mechanic, where a player is going to roll two dice, two d6s, and then you're going to get a combination of those dice, and you're going to write them down on your turn sheet. Now, each round will be a total of 9 turns. So let's say you roll a 5 and a 2. You're going to write on your spaces 5 and 2. That's it, or 2 and 5. However, it doesn't matter the order. And you're also going to have another card when you're going to be getting resources to do certain cool abilities. Resources such as pumpkins, hearts, and coins. And as you use them, you can trigger certain things. For example, if you use the one pumpkin, you can add, or two pumpkins, better say, you can adjust one die plus minus one. Or if you use three pumpkins, you can adjust it as well. But you can use it in a realm, even if you already use it for this turn. Because the basic rule is that you, on your turn, you will have three random realms that you will draw from your deck, which realms are basically games from Stonemaier Games. And everyone will have the three same realms per the round, right? So let's say I draw three. I shuffle my deck. I draw three. And then I get, let's go over here. We have, I draw Tapestry, I also draw Side, and I draw, let me see, Viticulture, right? So those are the three ones that I draw. And then the player on my right and my left will do the same thing. They will get, they were going to look on their deck, and they're going to get the three games, the same games that I drew. And then from there, basically every little game will have, every game, I'm sorry, every realm will have a little their own little game and their way on how they score points, how they get star, because at the end of the round, you're going to add up the stars that you get for each realm and then add them up together plus resources, and you're going to get a score of stars for round one, round two, round three, and then a total, and whoever has the most is the winner. But for example, Tapestry, you're going to have kind of like a Tetris shape at the bottom. A one will be one square. A two will be two squares, and then a three will be sort of like an L shape of three squares. Then the four, kind of like a T shape. Then the fifth or the five will be like an L with two spaces to each side. And then the six is like a weird shape. But anyway, you have like a little board of Tapestry, which you're going to be trying to cover them on rows and columns by using these shapes according to the die that you want to select. And for every row or column that you fill, you're going to get a star plus resources inside. On the game of side or the realm of side, it's going to be different for every 1 to 6 result. You can cross the top part of the card and you will get a resource. And if you want to use the bottom part of the card, well, you have to pay a resource to get a star. And then that's how can you get like stars for that realm. And if it's a culture, you're going to be getting with your dice different grapes. Once you fill a grape, well, you get the resources. But also you're trying to fulfill the demand of wine with... you know, with values from 10, 11, or 12, and for every order that you fulfill, you get 2 stars. So what the game does very well is kind of like, even if we're using this type of mini games by the dice that we roll, it's doing a good job of kind of like integrating at least overlay of the mechanics and impressions from the full game from Stonemaier Games. Now, the cool thing is that there's a lot of expansions out there that are very, you know, affordable. And you can get them from the Stonemaier Games website. And they include a lot of games that now they're not Stonemaier Games. But the base game, you will get most likely all the Stonemaier's, realms or games. So you're going to get Viticulture, you're going to get Side, you're going to get Tapestry, you're going to get Euphoria, you're going to get Between Two Cities, My Little Side, Between Two Castles, Charterstone, Wingspan, Pendulum, and the Society, which is that one, if I don't do any mistake. What's the name of this game? About it's based on books from Stone Meyer Games. I'm trying to go to my library. Red Rising. Red Rising. It's based on the Red Rising game. I was trying to find it. But anyway, you get most of the famous games from Stone Meyer. And that's it. I mean, you're going to play it. Now, how you can play it solo? Well, basically, you can do the same thing. It's like you can do your beat your own score. If you like, you know, I mean, you're going to do three rounds. You draw three cards. And that's what you play in the same turns. You're just rolling the dice for you. The other thing that you can play in a solitaire mode or a solo mode is the solitaire mini golf, which basically you're going to be going through different holes. Like if you were playing a whole real life mini golf session, you're going to go through 18 holes. And basically, as you are filling realms, you're going to get different scores, such as par, birdie, and so on and so forth, if you're familiar with the game of golf. And at the end of the round, you're going to get, you know, your score. You can also have the log, right, when you can track your play, early birdie, resourceful, precision, neighbors, birds of feather, weaving, which is to come through, some of the parts. And those are some of the names for the holes, by the way. Just you were probably thinking about, what is he talking about? Well, those are the 18 names for the mini golf, I guess, holes or courses. And every time that you go to a different hole, the rules are going to change. For example, on the early birdie, the par is one, and you're going to play with Charterstone, Side, and Tapestry. And you're only going to play 7 turns. Cross out the spaces for 2 turns before starting the game. In that way, it will help you to remember. And basically, you know, for each hole, you have to score at least 8 or a 9.5 stars if you're playing on the hard mode. And as you go through the whole 18 holes courses, well, then at the end, you will be either as successful and with your score, or well, you probably did terrible, like I do in real life. So anyway, that's how you're going to keep tracking, and that's another way of playing it solo. Now, without the golf course, I think the game is pretty cool by itself. And by the way, when you're playing the golf course, you also have a deck of cards, and it also are more another color for the Rolling Realms as well. So that's very cool. The box comes with enough markers for up to 6 players. So that's cool as well. And not only that, this is the first time I actually see on a Roll and Ride, which I'm not a huge fan of Roll and Rides. And you're probably hearing all these sound effects because I'm grabbing the components of the game. It's this. I'm going to try to give you this effect. You probably can hear it. Well, that, it's a nice fancy cloth that, there you go once again, that the game includes. And, you know, in that way you can clean your cards. So that's pretty cool because, you know, I don't remember seeing any roll and ride that will include clots for every single player. So there you go, Rolling Realms. What do I think about the game? Well, multiplayer works fantastic. I played with my wife multiple times. She really liked it. I really liked it as well. Very easy to follow. One of our favorite games as well that we like, Roll and Ride, it's On Tour, which, once again, you're rolling to that. You get a combination of 2 numbers, and you're trying to guide them in a connecting ascending orders to the United States or through the world if you're playing with the order variants or Europe. And you're having your, in an abstract way, you're having your rock band touring the US, right? So that's pretty cool. Now here, the plus is that even if it feels abstract, to be honest with you, because, you know, you just have mini games and that's all, still, I appreciate what Jamie did by kind of like, you know, giving you a very, very, very superficial, I guess, feeling of the games that he's showing you here, with some sort of mechanics like Side, right? Like, you know, like you have this track where you can get resources or you can get stars. And then with Tapestry, well, you're trying to fill the locations and trying to fulfill the board, kind of like the same layout as in this Tapestry board game. And, you know, so on and so forth. Charterstone and Viticulture, you're trying to fill up the grapes and then fulfill the orders. So, still gives you some cool mini games that are related to the actual board game. So that's pretty cool. And it doesn't feel as abstract as the other one as I'm comparing them together, even if they're different in a way. I also like the mechanics of, you know, mixing the deck and then drawing 3 and then everyone else has the same. It's cool. you don't lose, there's no like downtime between turns unless a player is having a lot of AP analysis paralysis. The rules wise are very clear on the game. Basically, you can only use one digit per card per turn, but you can use resources to, you know, get around that and do more combos and stuff. There's a cool way. There's a cool, you know, a stage in the game where when you have enough resources that you can do a lot of stuff in your turn to fulfill the demands of those mini games. So that's pretty cool because at some point it almost feels like not an engine builder, but also like a, I mean, like a combo builder, I guess. Like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm using this coin to add this number, to add this extra dice, and now I can place it here. And also using my pumpkins to play that die on a card, even if I already played that die on this card, whatever. So it's pretty cool. And then some, the same mini game, sometimes they will give you bonuses that you can use to interact with other games, other cards. That's great. And honestly, that makes me want to buy more expansions to see what other mini games I can find there, based on probably some of the favorite games that we all like. I feel like this game, it's a pretty fun game. And especially if you're a fan of Stonemaier games, you will really enjoy it and you will really appreciate it as well. The production is what you can expect from Stonemaier games, which is a very nice production and, you know, very nice components. And even if it's a roll and write, the cards are fantastic. And, you know, I appreciate the cloths, you know, that they included solo mode. I think it's fun. I think it's a fun game for solo mode. Once a game, even if you don't use the mini golf, I mean, you can play to beat your own score and it will be great. It will be great. You know, I mean, basically you can play one time and if you hit a certain score, then if you play it again, well, you can see it as, if you don't achieve at least that score, well, you lose the game, right? Beat your own score is what it is, or get it higher. The mini golf way of playing it is also very fun. It's probably a longer-ish way to do it, but it's fun, it still works, and basically you're doing the same just with some variations on the rules, but it gives you kind of like an objective of what to go for and you know, playing through the courses of a mini golf experience, I guess. With that being said, this game, I think I will give it a solid 4, where it's a game that I will enjoy playing it. It's a small box. I can bring it and play with the family. It's language dependent, so that might be something that you might want to consider if you speak English, but also your group maybe doesn't do it. You know, there's situations like that, like in, especially in Latin American countries. I have good friends that they record the Spanish podcast with me, where one of the things that we really look into is the language dependence on a game. And definitely Rolling Realms, it's a language dependent game because there's a lot of rules for every mini game. So, but other than that, I mean, the game is fantastic. I think the game is great. I give it a 4, like I said. For solo mode, I still think it's a game that is worth to have it, because it's very easy, because it's very affordable, and the production is pretty cool, and it will give you a good experience. I'm usually not a huge fan of beat your own scores, and I have mentioned this in the past, but this one in particular really makes me want to do it. I mean, really gives me the pleasure of, you know, rolling some nice production dice and doing those mini games and trying to do those puzzles. And you know, maybe because I really like Stonemaier games, honestly. I mean, Scythe is one of my favorite games ever. Charterstone, I almost finished the whole Legacy campaign. And I haven't tried a bad or terrible Stonemaier game so far. Probably my least favorite is Tapestry. I haven't tried Pendulum either, but other than that, I mean, every single game that I have tried and I have played, one of the things that I like is the production, and the games are very solid, especially the ones that are designed by Jamie. So there you have it, Rolling Realms by Jamie Stegmaier, a 4 for me, definitely a 1 that you want to keep in your radar for solo, and if you have a group to play with, definitely a 1 that you want to get, because there will be no downtime, and it's very enjoyable, and yeah. That's Rolling Real, my friend, from Stonemaier Games. Now let's go to the next game, because it's a game that, you know, I purchased recently on a trip. I do a yearly trip to Miniature Market, another advertising, I guess, to St. Louis, Missouri. And if you have followed me on the previous episodes, you know that I'm a huge, huge fan of soccer. A huge fan of soccer. So there was a campaign not too long ago on Kickstarter by Portal Games for a game named 11. And for some reason, I decided not to jump in, right? I decided to not to jump in. I mean, looking at everything, I was like, well, it doesn't really get me, right? As a soccer fan, I was like, it doesn't really get me. So I let it pass. Then I saw a good offer on it, and I went ahead and purchased it. And 11, well, it's basically, right, a translation from a football manager type of game. And I'm standing up right now to try to bring the game, the box in the way I can talk with you about it. It's basically trying to translate the experience of a football manager from a, you know, video game or a computer game to the tabletop. That's all it wants to do. That's the whole purpose of the game. The game is designed once again, by Portal Games, and it's designed by Thomas Jansen, Ignacy Trechevich, which is the CEO and owner of Portal Games, and also the designer of Robinson Crusoe, which is, by the way, I'm still waiting for my whole pledge for All In from Robinson Crusoe, which we got an update today at the time of the recording that it will be soon and the production looks nice and, you know, everything that a publisher can tell you while you're waiting for 2 years. But 11, what are we doing here? Well, first of all, the production of the game, it's a huge difference, the retail version towards the Kickstarter. And I will tell you why that's important to me towards the end of the review. In 11, we are trying to manage our club. And we're going to start, you know, by different times on the game, different sessions of the game-wise that we're going to be playing through. And, you know, for your team, you're going to have a stadium as well. And the stadium will have some stance levels and you can, you know, it will have some spaces for advertising as well and some spaces for offices and some spaces to put your uniform as well, which uniform you want to play. There's also, besides the stadium, you have kind of like your where all the action happens in the middle of the game, which is kind of like your offices and your staff and everything, you know, your managers and so on and so forth. And then you're going to have another board, which is where the other part of the game will work, which is the game match, right? Where the whole soccer match is going to be happening. And then you also have the league table, which is where you're going to be going through the standings and see, depending if your team won, which is 3 points, if you draw is 1 point, or if you lose, well, 0 points for you. So how you're going to be playing, which is in a very cool and innovative way, you're going to be playing through the week, just like in a real, you know, football club. Or, well, football, because football, for me, is the real soccer. I mean, the real soccer. Of course, soccer is the real football, better say. But anyway, through a week of a club, right, you're going to start to doing certain things. For example, on Monday, that's when you have the board meeting, right? So you're going to draw a card. And then they're going to tell you about an event, you know, something happened. Like, let's say this, we found out that, you know, one of our forwards, he's trying to negotiate a deal with a shoes brand. And, you know, he's doing it without our, you know, approval. So what do? And you have three options, right? Well, depending on the number of staff, on the staff that you got, some staff will be inclined to do different things than others. So to determine this, you're going to roll a D6. For example, staff member number one, from 1 to 3 is blue, 4, 5 is yellow, 6 is red, and the other ones will have different variants. You're going to roll the die and then see according to the die where your decision is, it falls. And then on that event card is going to have yellow, blue, and red. And depending on where it falls according to the majority of the staff or the board meeting, that's the decision that you're going to make, right? And that's how it's going to play. Then on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, that's where you can do basically actions, you know, to do things. And then you can also do potentially extra actions by doing some combos or engine building with your staff. The basic actions that you will do is you will be able to hire a player or hire a youngster, which basically is like a rookie with no name. You can sell a player or a rookie or a youngster. You can also hire more staff to improve your engine building of things and your combos. You can contract a sponsor, which is pretty cool and pretty cool mechanic, because if you contract the sponsor, you can decide, you know, if you want to just for them to advertise like a week announcement, or you actually want to include it, you know, for your brand as part of your stadium in a kind of like thematically, like you're going to have that stand for that sponsor in the stadium and maybe on your shirt, on your jersey. So that's pretty cool. And it's going to give you different rewards depending on what you choose. You can improve the stadium infrastructure, you know, or your office. You can build more stands. You can make it better for the fans. You can build, you know, different, better things for not only for the fans, but for the club in general, meaning the players and so on and so forth. And, or you can use once again, actions from the cards, from the staff, that allows you. So you're going to be doing one action on Tuesday, one action on Wednesday, one action on Thursday, which is pretty cool. It's simulating as you're going through the week, doing many things and getting money, getting more infrastructure, getting, you know, in a better situation with the fans. But then towards the weekend, it's match day, because usually the soccer games will be, in most leagues in the across the world, will be Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Sometimes Monday night as well. But anyway, you're going to have the match day, and you're going to have, depending on the division that you're playing, because it's in a scenario-based game, you're going to have a deck of teams that you're going to be playing against. Also, you're going to have tactic cards on your side. If you're familiar with soccer, you can play with a formation of 4-4-2 or 4-3-2-1 or 5-3-2. I mean, depending on how you want to play. You're going to get some scout report from the team that you're playing against. And he's going to give you kind of like a scout report-ish way, saying like, okay, this team has... you know, their strategy is usually to play on the midfield. They're strong on the midfield, so in that way you know what to play. You can accommodate your players on your field. You have some defense players and some scoring players, and at that point, you're going to reveal the card of the team that you're playing, and at that point it's just like a combination of comparing numbers, and basically if your strength of a shooting guy is higher than the defense value of the same area on the field, well, you score a goal, and that's how we go back and forth. And at the end of the round, you're gonna have a winner and you're gonna have a loser. Now, there's more rules that go into the game, and I mentioned at the beginning of the episode or during the episode that I wasn't gonna give you a tutorial of the game, and I'm not. I'm just giving you the overview rules, because the game, it's a heavy Euro kind of game. But once you learn it and once you make sense of it, and thematically it does make sense, that's when the things become easier. And the field at the match day, you're gonna divide the field left, a center, and from the center is going to be forwards, midfielders, defense, and then right wing. And basically, like I said, in every section of the field, you're going to be comparing. If you have a player that is attacking, well, and let's say the strength is 2, and the opponent has only one defender with a strength of 1, well, 2 versus 1, well, you score a goal. And that's it. And you keep going over each section of the field. And that's how at the end you're going to come up with the result of the game. If you win, you gain 3 points on the board, basically, on the league board, I'm sorry. And then if you tied, well, both teams get 1 point. If you lose, well, you don't get a point, and the opponent teams get 3 points. Then, of course, there's going to be other teams involved on the league. You're going to roll dice for them to simulate if they win, they lose, or how many points they will get. You know, basically, if they draw, they get 1 point, and so on and so forth. And that's how the league is going to keep advancing. And that's how at the end of the season, after you play against all the other teams, which usually is like 6 teams, then, you know, if you fulfill the scenario demands, well, you win and you keep advancing. If you don't, well, you're probably going to get fired from that club as the manager, and you will have to look for another club, right? Hopefully your aspirations will be like Barcelona or Real Madrid or something like that. Anyway... oh, sorry, that's the sound of the box as I close it. Nothing otherwise. But anyway, that's how the game plays, and that's how you're going to be getting, you know, points. There's a scenario base, like I mentioned, like at the beginning on the first scenario, is like you're on the third division, so you're playing against teams from third and second division, and you want to avoid, you know, being relegated, meaning that end the season on the last 2 places on the league board. And if you are, you know, you fulfill the situation, then you advance to the second scenario, and rules will change a little bit in sort of like a campaign base. There's a lot of expansions for the game, by the way, that add more variants to the game. I haven't tried them. There's the World Cup expansion. There's the international expansions. There's the stadium expansion. And apparently some of those add a lot of flavor on the game. Now, what do I think about the game? As a multiplayer game, I think it's important to mention that the interaction will be very minimum. Very, 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 very minimum. Because the only interaction will be probably if we are fighting to get the same players on the transfer area, which is actually not a fighting. It's probably I got the player before you did. Or if, you know... At the stands where we are on the league board, right? Like, am I above you or below you? Because that's how you win the game. At the end, whoever is higher on the league board is the winner, right? If you're able to make it all the way to the top where you're the champion, you're going to get points also at the end of the game for different things, how well you improve your stadium, your staff members, kind of like a set collection from your engine builder, and of course, points that you got during the game. So if you're playing multiplayer, that's how you determine it. If you're playing solo where you're trying to fulfill the scenarios, but also you have like a score sheet that will tell you like where you fall and kind of like, you know, in that way you can keep a score of things. It's definitely a game that I see that it was designed for solo. That's it. It's a game that it was designed for solo. Do I like it? I loved it. I just do. There's a few things that I'm not a huge fan of, but overall the game, I think it does what its purpose. Like, you're trying to have a football manager, experience where you can manage the club, you can manage the infrastructure of the stadium, you can manage the staff, you can manage the board meetings, you can prepare for the game, you can hire some players, you can improve some players, you can train them, and then you can use your knowledge of soccer to play different tactics with the scouts report that you gain from your scouters looking at the other team strategies and so on and so forth. It's a hard game, and it might be a little bit fiddly, I guess, at the time of getting the mechanics, especially if you're not familiarized with soccer, to getting the mechanics of the match day, about like, you know, okay, it's left wing and then right wing and then midfielders and then defense and then forwards and comparing like numbers and stuff. That might feel a little bit fiddly, but once you get it, once you do a couple of rounds, then definitely it will make sense, and now you will see, okay, I need to improve. Well, better, I better try and recruit a goalkeeper, you know, in that way I'm stronger here. Or maybe, you know, I'm not too good at offense. So, you know what? Let me get two forwards and I will place them like this. And then according with my tactic cards and so on and so forth. So that's pretty cool. And once again, I feel like this game, if you play it with a non-soccer fan, it might be a game that it might be cool and they might enjoy it. But then most people will really enjoy it and take the feeling of the game if you're not a soccer fan. I mean, when I play this game, and you know me that I love to play soundtracks, I play my favorite FIFA 11, 12, 17, 18, 19, 20, and 22 playlists, you know, that you can find on Spotify. And just, I mean, it was great, you know. I mean, the rounds at some point, they go fast. And yeah, I don't think the duration of the game is accurate. I mean, 90 minutes, I think it goes more to the 120 minutes, maybe the 2 hours per session. But I mean, it's a game that I really enjoy. And I'm sad that the Kickstarter version is very, very, very different than the retail version. To be honest, I mean, everything. Components, you still get wooden, but I mean, it's just like wooden discs. First, if you get the Kickstarter version, now every wooden piece has like the shape, for example, euros. It will be like the shape of a yellow euro symbol versus here is like yellow disc. For the fans, you have like a little fan, like a little arm, right? And then this is just a red disc, right? And so on and so forth. You can get the idea. And you know, there's cardboard in the retail version versus wooden pieces for the players, for the shirts that you use to represent the players on the field. So overall, I just feel like the Kickstarter version is way better than the retail version, components-wise. And that also makes me think that, you know, not all the time has to be like that. I mean, price point, this game is like a $50 retail. But like Endless Winters, take for example Endless Winter, like I told you earlier, you compare the productions of the Kickstarter version and the retail version, and yes, there's difference, but still the retail version is fantastic. So, you know, I just wanted to put it out there. 11 for me, and I only played it solo, I didn't play the multiplayer, but 11 for me, I will give it a 4. It's a game that I really like. It's a game that I will play when I feel like, you know, I want to play a soccer manager game. I think it does a great job. Some of their roles, I mean, let's be honest, it doesn't make sense with the art, but that's another subject that I won't dig into. But it just doesn't make sense because in the realistic world that we live on, most likely you won't see those kinds of person in a soccer club. But anyway, I mean, that's the way they want to do it, and they do it for a positive purpose. I can see that, and it's not that I disagree with. It's just that, I mean, that's the part where the game, I mean, it feels like kind of like, well, we're going to give it these variants in a way, right? But it's still, it's very cool. And you know, and the game works pretty well. And, you know, it's fantastic. And I really liked it. I really liked it. I really enjoy it. And I appreciate, even though at the same time what I'm saying, I appreciate the art. And I think it's cool and all that. And I think not everything has to be super realistic, right? So that part, I get it. And I enjoyed it as well. But anyway, this was 11. I really enjoyed it. I recommend it if you're a soccer fan. If you're not a soccer fan, well, I'm probably would recommend you to give it a try, you know, with a friend or borrow a copy, because I don't know if you will find it fiddly. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, I can see myself if this was, for example, I don't know anything about rugby. If this was about rugby, I don't know if I would enjoy it as much as I did just because it's soccer, if that makes sense. But anyway, that was 11. That was the third game of this show. And let's move and jump into our next section, to our next section, which is a new section that I'm going to start to implement on this podcast and hope you like it. So here we go. Okay, so this this new section, as I'm walking through my game room, which I have done in the past, it's a section that I would like to call Games That I Wish They Had a Solo Mode, all right? And it's basically games that I really enjoy, that I really love, but they don't have a solo mode, and I don't know or I don't see how can a good solo mode be implemented. And for this occasion, I would like to talk about Modern Art by Rainer Nitzia and published by Simon Games. Modern Art, it's a 3 to 6 players games. And, you know, it's 3 to 7, I think it is. Fantastic game. It's a great game. And when I played it, I had a lot of fun. Basically, you're going through an auction phases of art. But at the same time, you are able to manipulate the market, you know, round by round. And it's basically a free auction field at that point, right? You can play some cards that will allow you to do a secret auction. Some place play some cards that will allow you to do open auction. Like, you know, everybody goes for everything. And once you sell a piece of art, you get that money, of course. But also, once again, during the game, you will manipulate the market. The players will be able to manipulate the market and the demand. So at the end of the game, whoever has more money, you know, basically will win the game. That game can, I guess, to me, I can compare it to another Rainer Nitzia game that also doesn't have a solo mode, of course, which is Nightmare Productions, which basically it's an auction game. I think I talked about it in the past, but trying to make horror movies, and it's cool. But the difference is that in Nightmare Production is the same amount of money just circling around players, right? So there's never like more external source of income. Versus in Modern Art, it's a free-for-all scenario. And you can get money, and you can go crazy, and you can get more money, and once again, manipulate the market. So that's, it feels more free and open, I guess, the Modern Art game. And I wish it could be a solo mode. I honestly do, because it comes out of the enjoyment of when I play the game. Now, do I think it will work? Of course not, because you will lose all the excitement of the auction. But once again, it's just my dream of talking about a game that I really enjoy, I really loved, and I could wish I could have a similar experience on a solo mode. But once again, I know it's going to happen because the game is so great as it is, and you definitely need that human interaction to get that experience of being in an auction and having fun and doing that kind of like take that towards the other players. So that's the game that I wanted to mention, and I hope you enjoy this new section and this, first this new section where I'm going to be bringing every time that I want to talk about a game that I enjoy so much, but I wish it could be a solo mode that would give me the similar excitement or even better excitement. But at the same time, I hope you enjoy this new format where I brought you some news like I did on the first episode of Solo BG Podcast, and also where instead of one game, I talk to you briefly about three games and give you my impressions, and that basically still give it a rating to the game and tell you if I liked it or not at the end of that review. I hope you like it. I hope you enjoyed it. Once again, I promise consistency. Thank you to all of you that have reached out to inquire or ask me about when is going to be the next episode. Well, now you have it, and I promise more consistency as well. And on the next episode, I will tell you the reasons why I took a break and why I'm doing a different type of coverage this year at GenCon. So with that being said, I look forward to hear you. Until next time, like always, see you through the speaker and not the tabletop. Drink tequila, spend summer at a Mexican bar. Stephen Austin, Davy Crockett, and I'm driving my car. Maybe life is simple and I'm making it hard. My brain from my heart. Drove my motorcycle, breathe fumes on I-65. Every time I think about death, I feel alive. South of the border, you won't have to try. Wide open skies, get away. Remember the Alamo. Driving home on these Texas roads. Nowhere left to go. Go.